Welcome to the Shortwave Report for December 29th, 2017. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, and Russia's Sputnik Radio. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The federal government in Spain imposed elections in the Catalan region last week. This followed the dissolution of parliament in October after the voters in the region favored independence. Those politicians supporting independence won a slim majority in this election, though the leaders of the parties are either in exile or jail. This reporting from Germany, since Spanish radio is on vacation, points out that the election did not actually resolve anything other than that the majority of Catalonians still favor self-rule and do not like Prime Minister Rajoy. Creating coalitions in parliament will be difficult, and if not completed by March, will lead to new snap elections. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Separatist parties in Catalonia appear to have won a slim majority after yesterday's crucial regional elections in the region. The results could further inflame tensions between the wealthy Spanish region and central government in Madrid. Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy called the election after stripping Catalonia of its autonomy and sacking its government following an independence declaration late in October.
Long before vote counting was finished, the party of former Catalan leader Carles Puigdemont was celebrating victory. Along with the two other separatist parties, Together for Catalonia has a narrow majority, 70 out of 135 seats. From his exile in Brussels, Puigdemont said it was a black day for Spain's central government.
The Spanish state has been defeated. Rajoy and his allies have lost and have received a slap in the face from the Catalan people. They have lost the plebiscite through which they wanted to legalize their coup d'etat through Article 155. Prime Minister Rajoy has failed in Catalonia.
But the pro-Madrid camp was also celebrating victory. The Citizens Party, which opposes independence, emerged as the single biggest party with 37 seats. Now it, too, wants to form a coalition government.
Today, we have sent a message to the world that the majority of Catalans feel Catalan, Spanish, and European, and will continue to do so. And the nationalist parties can never again claim they speak for all Catalonians, because we are all Catalonia.
With rival groups declaring victory, this election has seemingly done nothing to end Catalonia's political deadlock. But it has made one thing eminently clear. The independence movement is not going away.
Spain's Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy says he is open to dialogue after yesterday's regional elections in Catalonia, which saw separatist parties win a slim majority. Rajoy said he would talk with the new regional leaders as long as they didn't violate the country's constitution, but he did not respond to calls for a meeting by Carles Puigdemont. Now, the ousted independence leader is in self-imposed exile in Brussels. Here's what the two men had to say.
I'm ready to meet Prime Minister Rajoy in Brussels or in a different place in the EU, except Spain, for obvious reasons. I'm ready to do that because it's time for Catalonia, for the Spanish state, and for Europe to start a new political phase. And this phase needs to be defined by political solutions, not by the banal and delirious repression we've been seeing so far.
I'm hopeful that a new era based on dialogue, not confrontation, will begin in Catalonia. A time of cooperation and not imposition. A time for plurality and not unilateralism. The government of Spain would like to offer all its cooperation and all its willingness for a constructive, open and realistic dialogue, but always within the rule of law.
Just a day after regional elections in Catalonia, it's still difficult to judge who won. Pro-independence parties took a slim majority, but the party of ex-Catalan president Carles Puigdemont is not the largest in this new parliament. That honor went to the Liberal Citizens Party, which is anti-independence. Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy's conservatives were nearly wiped out, but he's still refusing to talk to the separatists despite pleas from Puigdemont.
Let's now bring in DW's Lisa Lewis, who's in Barcelona for us. Lisa, Rajoy rejecting a meeting with Puigdemont, the separatist leader offering dialogue. Does this mean the standoff will just continue?
Yes, it does really. If you listen to them closely, so what's Puigdemont saying? Obviously, I'm happy to talk, but I'm still in favour of independence. On the other hand, you've got Rajoy saying, I'm also happy to talk, but not to Puigdemont. He wants to talk to Inés Arrimadas, the head of the Ciudadanos party, which came out first in these elections. It doesn't sound that these two will be sitting at one negotiating table together in the near future.
Does this mean the standoff is just going to continue?
It looks like it, yes. There seems to be a deadlock, really. I mean, if you look at what's the outcome of these elections, yes, the independent supporters have won the elections. They could form a government with 70 seats in parliament, but forming that government will be very complicated. This coalition would be made up of three parties, two large parties that can't seem to be able to agree on a common leader. I mean, it is very complicated, right? Carles Puigdemont is in exile in Belgium. He can't come back without going to jail. And the other head of the other party, of the ERC party, Junqueras, he is in jail in Spain at the moment. So it's not really that easy to find someone new to replace them. And then on the other hand, you've got the smaller coalition party, the CUP party, and they are saying, you know, we will join you, but only if you really go for independence. Now, that'll be very complicated for all of them to go for independence right away, because they have seen over the past few months that then Madrid would intervene right away.
Lisa, Mariano Rajoy calling this election and then his party, the Conservatives, registering their worst result yet. Has this election weakened him?
Absolutely. And not only in Catalonia, where he's won about three seats, actually, his Partido Popular, the People's Party, and that was down from 11 seats in 2015. But Ciudadanos has come first. That party, which is quite new, it was founded in 2005, is now becoming a serious competition for the People's Party, for Mariano Rajoy. There are general elections looming in 2019, and it will be a lot harder for Mariano Rajoy to win those elections now.
There was a record turnout in this election, 82%. How significant is that?
That is quite significant in the sense that beforehand, the independence opponents were always saying, you know what, yes, the independent supporters are winning the elections, but that's only because the other guys are not turning out to vote. You can hardly argue that's the case now with 82% of participation. So it seems like really a lot of the Catalans are in favor of independence, or at least opposed to the other parties that are not in favor of independence.
Lisa, where do we go from here? What's the situation going forward?
Well, obviously, the different parties will now try to form a coalition. The parliament will come together, will stand normally until the end of January, and then they have to elect a new leader of Catalonia. They have until they would elect that new leader in February, and if they haven't done so by April, that would trigger automatically new elections. So we could see new snap elections in late May or early June.
And just briefly, Puigdemont, how relevant is he still if his party didn't get a majority?
Well, he is very relevant because amongst the pro-independence parties, his party got the highest share of the vote. So normally that party would also put forward the new leader. But as I said, it'll be very complicated because he is in exile and there is no obvious number two. But people are really listening to what he's saying. I mean, from here, obviously.
So far, the EU has largely stayed out of this crisis. Is there any sign that Brussels may now get involved?
Not really, actually. One member of the European Parliament said today, we will not get involved in this conflict. This is an internal conflict in Spain. It doesn't concern the European Union. Obviously, the pro-independence camp was hoping, they were telling me yesterday, again last night, we want the EU to intervene so that everybody can come to the negotiating table and find a solution to this crisis. But it looks like this is not going to happen in the near future.
Lisa Lewis joining us from Barcelona. Thank you.
Those reports are from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, Radio Havana Cuba, which has restored its web stream. In Honduras, there is criticism that the victory of the incumbent president in a highly disputed election count was imposed by the U.S., Following a near impeachment, the president of Peru pardoned former President Fujimori. This has led to street protest, claiming that the impeachment was blocked as a deal for the pardoning of Fujimori's human rights crimes. Palestine has strongly condemned Guatemala for announcing that it will follow the U.S. lead and move its Israeli embassy to Jerusalem. Venezuela expelled diplomats from Canada and Brazil for meddling in domestic politics. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Salvador Nasralla, the Honduran opposition presidential candidate, said that the victory of incumbent President Juan Orlando Hernández was imposed by the United States on the Honduran nation. The situation is practically decided by Washington, Nasralla said, and he added, I no longer have anything to do in politics, but the people, which are 80% in my favor, will continue the fight. As he spoke, police were busy removing the latest barricade erected around the capital, Tegucigalpa, by Nasralla's supporters, who began a series of protest rallies against the vote, prompting Honduran authorities to declare a curfew on December 1st. His announcement came after the White House recognized the re-election of Hernández, despite widespread misgivings about the vote count. Nasralla accused his opponent of holding up to power illegally after gross fraud in the November 26 election. Peruvian President Pedro Pablo Kuczynski pardoned former authoritarian leader Alberto Fujimori late on Sunday, triggering Christmas Eve street clashes as protesters denounced the decision as part of a political deal. Hundreds of demonstrators flooded the streets of Lima, carrying signs that read, pardon is illegal and pardon is impunity. Kuczynski's decision clears Fujimori of convictions for human rights crimes and craft when his right-wing government was in power from 1990 to the year 2000. Many in Peru saw the pardon as part of a quid pro quo. 3 days earlier, Fujimori's loyalists, led by his lawmaker son, Kenji, unexpectedly saved Kuczynski from a vote in Congress that nearly removed him from office. Palestine has strongly condemned as shameful Guatemala's decision to move its embassy to Jerusalem after U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to recognize the city as Israel's capital. It's a shameful and illegal act that goes totally against the wishes of church leaders in Jerusalem and violated a non-binding UN General Assembly resolution which denounced Washington's provocative move, said a statement released by the Palestinian Foreign Ministry on Monday. The strongly worded statement came after the small Central American country announced that it would be moving its diplomatic mission in Israel to Jerusalem, making it the first country to follow in the footsteps of Trump. The statement read that Palestine considers this a flagrant act of hostility against the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people and international law. Only 8 countries, including 4 tiny Pacific islands, stood with the U.S. in voting no to the resolution. Guatemala and fellow Central American country Honduras, both of which are dependent on U.S. funding, also voted against the UN General Assembly's motion last week. Canadian Charge of Affairs Craig Kowalik and Brazilian Ambassador to Caracas Rui Pereira have been expelled from Venezuela, this according to National Constituent Assembly President Delcy Rodriguez. Rodriguez accused Ottawa of meddling in domestic politics, saying that Kowalik showed no restraint in his permanent and insistent rude and vulgar interference in the internal affairs of Venezuela. Canadian officials, in step with U.S. President Donald Trump, have imposed sanctions on senior Venezuelan officials following the National Constituent Assembly election, warning they will continue to put pressure on what they call the anti-democratic Maduro regime. Brazil, meanwhile, stands accused of violating the rule of law. We have decided to declare persona non grata the Brazilian ambassador until such time as constitutional order is restored in the neighboring country, Rodriguez told journalists. Her remarks were a direct rebuke of Brazil's Senate-imposed President Michel Temer, who last week said that Venezuela would be welcomed back into regional trading bloc Mercosur if the country, in his words, returned to democracy.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. I'm happy to report that Cuba's web stream is back up as well as their website, radiohc.cu. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6100, 6060, or 6000. All the times they announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. The only funding this program receives is from donations. Please help if you can. I'm grateful for the support that some listeners have given this year. We will conclude with Sputnik Radio. George Galloway interviewed journalist Calvin Tucker, who is one of many observers of the latest election in Venezuela. The incumbents remained in office in an election process that was praised for its transparency. Americans and some European press report that the citizens are very unhappy with the government under Maduro, claiming that the majority support the opposition. Maduro, like Hugo Chavez before him, is often presented in the American media as a dictator, something that the majority of Venezuelans disagree with. Russia's Sputnik Radio.
The left-wing government in Venezuela is fighting back against its sea of troubles, and appears to be winning.
U.S.-sponsored color revolutions previously used to go only one way, the defeat of the target and the replacement by stooges.
Not so Venezuela, where the successor to President Hugo Chavez has struggled with economic and financial problems, the low price of oil, and of course, U.S. finance subversion and even deadly violence.
All rather familiar in Latin America for more than half a century, but President Nicolas Maduro, clinging tightly to the constitution, has begun to win elections.
Recently returned from his role as an observer of the latest set of polls is Calvin Tucker of the Morning Star, who joins us now. Calvin, where did it all go right? How come this has apparently been turned around?
Well, I would actually say that Venezuela is currently in a quite a difficult economic and social situation. There is hyperinflation. We have shortages of some basic foodstuffs and medicine. But there's really two competing narratives for who's responsible for these problems. You have the opposition in the United States point of view, which is this is all the fault of the socialist government, and in particular of President Maduro. And then you have the government's point of view, which is that the country has been subject to economic warfare and US sanctions, which have created and which are fueling these problems. But judging by the results of the elections that I observed a week ago, the Venezuelan public are siding with the government on this issue, I think.
Tell us about those elections and what you saw with your own eyes.
I was there as part of what's called the International Electoral Accompaniment Mission. That is 50 international people from all walks of life, different political parties. We had academics, mayors of towns and cities across Europe and Latin America, journalists and so forth. We also had a group of experts from Latin America who were part of what's called the CELA mission. And these are really quite centrist or even centre-right establishment figures, former government ministers in Latin American countries. We were allowed to talk freely to opposition political party politicians, to ordinary voters, to witnesses during each stage of the electoral process, and we got to audit the electoral count itself. Venezuela, actually, contrary to the popular media mythology, actually has the most audited and safest electoral system in the world.
I was about to say, quite a dictatorship,
Jimmy,
huh?
Yeah, exactly. Jimmy Carter described it as pristine, the presidential election that we observed.
In 2012.
Chavez, last one.
Indeed, in the report of the observer team, and I should say this was agreed unanimously by every single observer, we describe it as the best electoral system in the world. And that's because it combines a computer touchscreen voting system with an auditing process where the paper ballots, which are produced when a voter touches the electoral computer screen, are then put into a box. And at the end of the process, the box is tipped out, and in front of the witnesses from all the political parties, the paper receipts, the ballots, if you like, are counted and compared to the computerized results. Those results are then put on the website of the CNE, that's the name of the Venezuelan Electoral Commission. So everybody can compare the tally with the computerized results. So if there's any fraud, the opposition political parties themselves have actually signed the tally sheet.
The narrative is that Venezuela is and has been a dictatorship, in which case it is the most elected dictatorship on the earth. No country on the earth has had as many elections, referenda, and as you've just explained, in the most pristine, corruption-proof manner. Mm. How do you account for that?
I think there's a Western narrative which has unfortunately gained traction, which stems from Venezuelan's challenge to the neoliberal elites. And I would say that the divisions within Venezuelan society are exactly the same as the divisions within British society.
Mm. Now, that there is economic subversion of Venezuela by the United States could only be denied by someone who's like 13 or who knows nothing of the US's role in destabilizing countries from Guatemala in the 50s through Nicaragua in the 70s and 80s. And Chile, of course, and you mentioned it in the early 70s, where the president himself was murdered in a coup organized by the United States. So that subversion can't be gainsaid. That the opposition are fiercely opposed to the process in Venezuela is genuine. Whatever the US involvement in it is, it's genuinely felt by the rich, by their comprador in the country. All that is a given. But there have been mistakes made, particularly in the economic field, by the Chavez-Maduro period. I think they would accept that themselves. If they wouldn't, it's foolish. Did you yourself see anything wrong or that could be done better in your view?
Absolutely. I mean, contradictions within Venezuelan society and economy abound wherever you look. But I think the critical point is that the government has restored security to the streets and security to the neighborhoods following the period of opposition violence that took place over the summer and the opposition attacks on the electoral process. And that's really led to quite a surprising sea change, I think, in public attitudes towards the future.
You mentioned security and the kind of threats to security that we saw in these demonstrations and street occupations and so on was obviously enough. But one of the contradictions that we noticed, for example, is the murder rate in Venezuela, the depredation of organized criminal gangs and so on. It's difficult to square that with a revolution going on. I mean, in a real revolution, there wouldn't be any criminals around to murder you. They'd all be behind bars or 6 foot under the earth. Have they got to grips with the crime issue? Because for us, that was a major factor in seeping away at the revolution's popularity.
Most of the gang violence or killings would be inter-gang related. So you can't really extrapolate that level of crime down to the ordinary person on the street, although it has to be said, to be fair, it is many times more dangerous than it is walking around a city like London or Paris or New York in the evening. In terms of what they do about it, it's difficult. I mean, the sort of decisive security operation that people could argue perhaps is necessary to deal with this level of gang violence would fall foul of the rule of law and of due process. And one thing the Venezuelan government continually stresses is that this is a legitimate constitutional democratic process, and they're going to stick with it, even though that sometimes leads to difficult or negative consequences. So it's a dilemma for the government, but certainly there's a lot of people in the street who were calling for more decisive action.
Well, if it's done to please the Liberal Guardian and the rest, it doesn't work, because the unremitting hostility of the Liberal media and Liberal political class towards Venezuela is, I'm afraid, undimmed. But you, in that report, I hope, have redressed the imbalance. Calvin Tucker, thanks for joining us on the Sputnik.
Thank you.
That interview is from George Galloway's program on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's simpler than you might think. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is even easier. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at the website. And get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 21st year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.